Call to order, the September 21, 2012 meeting of the Chicago State University Board of Trustees, Academic and Student Affairs Committee meeting is hereby called to order. Roll call.
Trustee Curtin?
Here.
Trustee Morris, Trustee Joyce?
Here.
Trustee Young?
Here.
Trustee Sanchez? Thank you.
Quorum exists for business of the board to begin. Ms. Phillips, will you certify that the notice for this meeting has been given pursuant to the requirements of the Open Meetings Act?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the meeting notice requirements have been met. Notices were posted 48 hours before this meeting in the Cook Administration, Student Union, and Academic Library Building.
Information items. Academic and Student Affairs Update, Provost, Dr. Westbrook.
Again, good morning.
Good morning.
You have the report in front of you, but I do want to more or less present some of the highlights. Although we're extremely proud of all of the accomplishments that occur within the academic areas, of course, you know, I can't use the entire meeting to talk about each and every one of them. But one that I would like to bring to your attention that has received some media and press is the collaboration that we have with Indiana University Purdue campus, as well as with the Argonne National Laboratory. Recently, we became a recipient of a $2.5 million grant for a period of 5 years. And the purpose of this grant is to establish a pilot regional STEM centers. And with the STEM centers, much focus is going to be placed on identifying individuals who have an interest in the sciences. So, you know, we're really excited about that center moving forward on our campus. The next highlight is in the College of Education. In the College of Education, as of July 25th, 2012, all licensure programs received approval by the Illinois State Board of Education. This is not to be confused with NCATE. Recently, the college received NCATE accreditation as well, but it has another level of accreditation which appears at the state level, and that's with the Illinois State Board of Education. Next initiative, the College of Education has been involved in research initiatives over in the Woodlawn community area with Dr. Brazier and Dr. So. She's a faculty member in our EDD, our Educational Leadership Doctoral Program. And she has taken 11 students who are also doctoral candidates. And essentially, they've gone into the community and they're doing their research in that community. Essentially, they're going to focus on the schools, an assessment of what some of the needs are, and they're going to build their research agenda around their findings. Something else that we're exceptionally proud about is, you know, we know that cancer continues to take lives on a daily basis. And as a result, Dr. Britt, along with other faculty members in the College of Health Sciences, recently submitted a grant to establish the Chicago Southside Cancer Initiative. So that will be the first for our campus. So funding has been received. I think it's the startup money is $150,000 for a 3-year period. So we are hoping, because it is a pilot, as a result of our findings, that more dollars will be available to us as we resubmit our proposals. Also in the College of Health Sciences, the Department of Nursing is currently preparing for its site visit for accreditation, which is scheduled for February 12th through the 14th. The faculty, as well as the dean and provost, we're currently reviewing the self-study that has been prepared. And that self-study is due for submission October 15th. So we have lots going on at the university in addition to HLC that you will hear more about later. The other thing that's happening in the College of Health Sciences, they've created a lecture series where, and in that lecture series, we have renowned individuals coming on campus to not only talk to our faculty, but to also talk to our majors that are in healthcare, the healthcare disciplines. Recently, we had Terry Mason, Dr. Terry Mason, who's the chief medical officer with the Cook County Health and Hospital System, you know, on our campus, along with others. So we're hoping through providing that lecture series, we will expose our students to many of the individuals who are instrumental in making decisions here in the state and beyond. Our Center for Teaching and Research Excellence, this is the center where our professional development for faculty and some staff is initiated. Through the center, there are opportunities to apply. It's very competitive. But faculty in particular can apply for enrichment grants. We had 31 faculty members to apply and receive a total sum of $52,532, and this was effective July 1. So as we conclude through the fiscal year, we anticipate spending the total amount of the $400,000, which has been allocated for professional development for faculty. We had four faculty members to receive seed grants for $37,500. And because we continue to encourage our students to engage in research with our faculty, we had four students to receive $25,219. And of course, that's divided equally amongst the students. One highlight that I did not mention was what's going on in our Honors College. In our Honors College, recently under the direction of the interim dean, Dr. Philip Krantz, we have merged the Presidential Scholars with the students who are enrolled in the Honors College. And last night over dinner at the gala, I missed the advisory council meeting with the Honors College, but I was informed that they passed, as a part of their bylaws, that they are now going to allow the Presidential Scholars, if they're interested, to enroll in 6 hours of Honors College credit. And that's phenomenal, because we want to make certain that we have a pipeline of students that are entering and are eligible for the Honors College, and that's one way to build it. Lastly, the university catalog. The university is required to post its university catalog. In previous years, we had paper copies, but we know that one of the ways to make certain that we can expand our offerings is to actually have it online. So the 2012, the catalog is for 2 years. So the 2012-2014 catalog has been posted. So all of the requirements that are included in that catalog apply to the students who entered fall term, the current semester, through 2014. Are there any questions?
Don't hear any questions, and thank you for that report. That's full of good news. Ms. Phillips, will you note that Trustee Sanchez is present?
Thank you. Trustee Sanchez?
Okay, there's further good news here under action items. Could we hear from, we won't go straight to the, we will go to the Higher Learning Commission update, Dr. Paul Musil.
Good morning. Thank you, Trustee Joyce and trustees, for giving me the opportunity to speak to you this morning. The Higher Learning Commission self-steering committee has been working for essentially 2.5 years on our self-study, and this self-study is now in its very, very final stages. It is being edited and tightened up for presentation to the HLC. It's submitted electronically, and so that will happen in the next couple of days. But that doesn't mean our job is over, because now that the self-study will have been submitted, our job is to prepare for the visit. We hosted a mock visit. A couple of the trustees and over 100 members of the university community met with the mock team August 27th and 28th, and they gave a number of recommendations which we are acting upon. They helped us prepare for the visit. They gave the team members, I think, between them have had over 100 visits to universities as part of the HLC process. So it's a very seasoned group, and so we're taking what they said very seriously. The team chair of our actual HLC visiting team is Dr. W. Randy Smith, Vice Provost for Academic Programs at The Ohio State University. I want to tell him we're The Chicago State University, so but I won't, don't worry. And he's contacted us, we've spoken with him, and we've had a couple of emails back and forth. He wants to do a pre-visit. He will be coming in early October to kind of see the campus and to help prepare for the visit. Essentially, the visiting team will be quite large. It'll be possibly up to 8 members. Right now, he said that 8 members have been identified. Maybe one or two of those might have a last-minute emergency. So we're looking at a team, you know, between 6 and 8 members coming to campus in November. So they're going to have a large team, and they're going to be able to meet with a lot of university constituencies and to see the campus. What else? So what's going to happen is that the visit, which is November 12th through 14, as he's able to read, he and the team are able to read the self-study, they will set the agenda for the 3-day visit. So please do mark your calendars, all trustees. It's up to the team chair to the extent to which he wishes to meet with board members. He may wish to meet with all of you, some of you. It's up to him and the team. But please do mark your calendars, and we'll be contacting you as soon as he lets us know when he wants to meet with board members and the like. We have always, since April essentially, we have made our drafts of the self-study available to the university community via the Cougar Connect portal. Once the button has been pushed and the official self-study has been sent to the HLC, we'll put that on Cougar Connect. One of the things that I would encourage university members of the university community to do is to read the self-study, particularly the parts that refer to their particular function through the university. But also it's very clear that it's important that we know the mission. I think a lot of us are very comfortable and clear about the mission, but also the strategic plan. It's very important that we are very, very knowledgeable. Every one of us should know the strategic plan. We should understand the PME process, which is our planning process, and how what we do ties into the strategic plan. I'm saying that, I know that you all are very clear on that, but members of the university community do need to be aware of how we plan. That's a good way to prepare for the visit. As far as marketing is concerned, if you go to the website, you see that we have a banner announcing the visit. There's videos have been made, and there's a lot of effort that has been going into preparing the campus community for the visit. The main issue is, of course, we need to go to the people. We, as the steering committee, are going to be visiting with campus units and the colleges to inform them about the visit, what should be expected of them at the time of the visit, and how they should prepare. That's basically it. That's my report. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Apparently there are no questions, Dr. Musil, and thank you and your committee for the work you've been doing. been doing, this is going to be an important
yes.
Couple of months that will carry over for a long time here in Chicago. So,
it's been our pleasure.
Next item on the agenda, the good news continues. We've got an action item concerning the College of Pharmacy. Dr. Mary Mobley-Smith, would you discuss what we were talking about?
Thank you and good morning. I'd also like to bring up Dr. Dolores Nobles-Knight, who's the chair of the Pharmacy Practice Department.
Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you.
So for the record, I'm Dr. Miriam Mobley-Smith, the Dean of the College of Pharmacy. It gives us great pleasure this morning to present to you a very unique practice partnership that we have been able to foster since the initiation of the College of Pharmacy program. One of the more critical elements in ensuring the development as well as the sustainment of a strong and accredited College of Pharmacy is to be able to have an experiential program, in other words, the practical component of the program, of the curriculum, which constitutes approximately 30% or more of the actual programming. It needs to be strong in order for the accreditation to be maintained. Not only to be maintained, but to be achieved in the first place and then move forward. So back in 2008, we had the unique opportunity of developing a partnership with the University of Chicago Medical Center, which, you know, is not that far in proximity from here. But being a tertiary medical center, it provided the element that we did not have as a College of Pharmacy, as a healthcare professions program, which many of our sister programs, colleges and schools of pharmacy across the country had. And so not being located in a medical center where we have a hospital, it's very important that we develop strategic partnerships in order to further develop and maintain the clinical component of our program. And so with a number of discussions and negotiations, we were able to forge a partnership initially to not only explore how the University of Chicago Medical Centers could serve as our primary academic medical teaching center for the program, but how it would also be expanded in the future and to create something very novel and unique within colleges and schools of pharmacy. So we were successful in doing that. What the University of Chicago provides for our program are various types of instructional services, which include delivery of specific and specialized therapeutics course material that's medication related, such as the care of patients in the medical intensive care unit, surgical intensive care units, cardiovascular units, and so on. And why that's important is because these areas are so specialized, it assists us in not having to hire pharmacists or hire faculty members who are more narrowly focused, but yet we can concentrate more on hiring faculty who are broad-based in their therapeutic knowledge and can deliver this information to the students and serve as faculty mentors in those particular areas, and then reserve some of the more specialty topics to our clinicians that are there in our practice center partnership. So not only do they deliver that coursework within the actual core of the curriculum, but also in our elective courses, which would allow the students to further develop their knowledge and skills in those particular areas to help them be better pharmacists and practitioners in the future. In addition, they assist with clinical instruction in terms of various types of workshops. They serve, selected individuals serve on our curriculum committees, assessment committees, to ensure that our curriculum is top-notch and future-focused. They also teach in the field there at the medical center, the students throughout our 4 years of the curriculum, but most particularly in the fourth year, when all of their curriculum is off-site in terms of clinical practicums. So at the beginning, because this program, this partnership had never been costed out, as you say, part of the development was to actually put dollars and cents on how much not only it would cost them to function in this capacity, but also from a university perspective, how much we would need to pay in order to do it, because these things are not free. You want quality work, you pay for quality. And so it's taken this period of time to really come down to the bottom line, I guess, of how much per year it would cost. Not that we haven't had this contract before, we have from the beginning, but as we grew, as the number of students grew, as the demands from the curriculum grew, then we were able to better put a number on the actual cost of the partnership. So the resolution that you have in front of you reflects the what the partnership will cost us going forward. It is a four-year commitment with an initial payment of $223,000 to the University of Chicago Medical Center, with subsequent payments of $250,000 for a total cost of $223 for the initial payment, $225 annually thereafter for a contract that is valued at no more than $898,000. As a side note, our accrediting body, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, has deemed this partnership noteworthy, and we are in the process of writing up the results of this partnership to share in the healthcare literature. Would you like to?
Just to also give a little bit more information in terms of the benefits of this particular partnership to the university at large. The environment around experiential education here in the city of Chicago has become very competitive in that we have a number of additional colleges of pharmacy that are now present here in the Chicago area, and there is a lot of competition for high-quality experiential sites. We have competitors who are willing to pay a significant amount per student for these sites and for these sites to take their students exclusively. What we've been able to negotiate with the University of Chicago has been a contract where they not only offer experiential education to our students, but they also teach in our curriculum, as Dr. Mobley Smith has said, and at a relatively reasonable cost for all of these services. And so in terms of benefit to the university, we are getting a significant number of high quality sites for our students, experiential sites, at a reduced cost in the marketplace. We are also getting a number of very high quality faculty who are currently in practice and on the cutting edge of practice, who are teaching our students, not only in the curriculum, but in these sites. So we're getting a lot of bang for our buck, if you will, out of this contract.
Could I ask, what are some of those sites where our students are getting that experience?
We have partnerships with most of the medical centers here in the Chicago area. So we also have partnerships with Rush University Medical Center, with Northwestern Medical Center, Mount Sinai. Currently, we have a partnership with Roseland as well as Norwegian American. So some of the hospitals that are more community-based. We also have a number of sites that are in the metropolitan, so in the suburban area, including extending into Northwest Indiana.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Yeah, I have a couple. Has University of Chicago been a partner since 2008 in this program?
Yes, they have.
How was it paid for in the past?
We did have a contract with them that was it was an escalating contract, if you will, because again, we were not, this is a novel program in terms of how we're doing this. And so we weren't really sure what the true cost of offering the program should be. And so what we arranged with them initially was an escalating contract where in the beginning, we did not have fourth year students. And so there was no reason to pay them the amount of money that it takes for them to precept fourth-year students. So we paid them for some teaching in our curriculum, as well as some precepting of our introductory students. And then over time, this contract has escalated in the amount that we've paid them per year as they've added on additional services that they're providing to us.
Just to give you another indication of how it works, in our fourth year, all of our students have to complete 7 rotations, as we call it, of 6 weeks each. Part of them are core rotations, such as medicine, community hospital, ambulatory care, and then 3 elective courses of their choosing to help broaden their knowledge base. And so the University of Chicago provides quite a few of the ambulatory care and the medicine rotations for us. As an example, for medicine, up to 60% of our students may have their medicine practicums there at the University of Chicago. So it's a significant number of our students that are positioned there.
What's the length of this contract?
This contract would go for a total of 3 years. Right.
Are there any other questions?
I have one more question. In response to Trustees Joyce's questions, you mentioned all the other institutions that we have a relationship with. Are there costs involved in all those relationships?
Yes, there are. Mm-hmm. And those costs tend to be significantly higher than the costs that we have negotiated with the University of Chicago.
So as an example, as Dr. Nobles Knight stated, there are now 6 colleges and schools of pharmacy, or the programmatic pieces, within the metropolitan Chicago area, if you include an expansion from the University of Illinois up to the Rockford campus, which is focused more on rural health, but nevertheless, it still adds number 6. So when we first began, what we call the experiential landscape, in other words, the practice partnerships and collaborations, there were quite a number of them, and they were fine in terms of all of us having the ability to meet our educational needs. With the addition of 2 new programs last year, one in North Chicago, the Rosalind Franklin College of Pharmacy, and Roosevelt University out in Schaumburg, they also then entered the market looking for experiential sites. And so the dollars involved in a number of these placements had gotten up to about $1,500 per student per rotation. And so if you do the math on that and you multiply each student times $1,500 times the number of students that you have times the number of rotations that each of them have to do, and this is per rotation, so for each student that would, you know, multiply it out, then you start to talk about a hefty amount of money. And that's not including any involvement in terms of providing specialized curricular teaching. And so, indeed, the contract that we forged is one that not only is cost effective, but, you know, because it is novel, we're quite proud of it.
Yeah. No further questions then. Do I hear a motion to approve the contract to the College of Pharmacy?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Doctor. Now we'll hear from the student affairs update. Vice President Henderson.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Angela Henderson. I am the Vice President for Enrollment Management and Student Affairs. I'll start off by saying that enrollment management has had a very robust, exciting, and productive quarter since the last time we've met. There are many exciting things happening in the various areas, and I'll highlight some of those in this report. I'd like to acknowledge 2 of my colleagues who are here, Associate Vice President Cherie Sidney. She is responsible for enrollment-related services, and Dr. Teresa McKinney. She is the Dean of Student Affairs. So I'll be reporting on their areas as well. Enrollment management focuses, although we have many departments that make up enrollment management, our ultimate focus is on enrollment, retention, and graduation. The focus of this quarter for all of the departments, in addition to enrollment-related service, enrollment, retention, and graduation, has been compliance, customer service, improved communications, and making more data-driven decisions, focusing on more data-driven decision-making. Our enrollment cycle for this fall started August 20th for fall 2012, and we had approximately 6,000 students who enrolled in the fall. We are still enrolling students. We had a 12-week session that started September 17th, and because that enrollment session is still in place, we will not have the final numbers for enrollment until after September 24th. So I won't be reporting on our enrollment numbers for this term. I'd like to talk a little bit about our Office of Business Process and Compliance. We do have an individual who focuses on compliance for the entire enrollment management team. And one of the outcomes from this term has been that we have completed an operations procedures manual for all areas in enrollment management. That's particularly important as we look at internal controls, compliance, and having a schedule of review for all the processes and procedures that take place in our various areas. In addition to that, what's been happening in compliance, we have weekly and monthly reporting out to our team members on the progress of process improvement and compliance. We have biweekly meetings with directors in other departments to share some of our business process redesigns that are going on in enrollment management. And we have worked very hard to have timely responses to the external auditor's request for this year. From the Office of Institutional Effectiveness and Research, some of the outcomes from this term include we have completed our institutional effectiveness and research website. And on that website, we have fact books that contain information on enrollment and retention and graduation for the university that dates back to approximately 5 years. So an external person or an internal person can go on that site, and if you have any questions about the enrollment trends, transfer students, where our students are coming from high schools and universities across the state, or demographic information about our students, that information is available on our institution. It's on CSU's website, and it's under the link Institutional Effectiveness and Research. And I'll be glad to show it to you during the break if there are any questions regarding that. In addition to that, our institutional researcher has been very involved with the Higher Learning Commission Steering Committee planning team in providing and supporting the data requests of the various committees. And our director of research also is our representative with the Illinois Board of Higher Education's Performance Management or Performance Metrics Committee. And he's been very involved in helping to set the metrics that the state will look at when students graduate from a university. We have been involved in looking at more than just the first-time, full-time graduation of our students, but there are some other metrics that will be looked at with our graduates and our researchers at the table, in addition to our president and other members of the university, and helping to shape those metrics because they have gone into effect now for this fiscal year. Some other exciting things that have been going on in our Office of Enrollment-Related Services around admissions include that our admissions applications were up for this term. So we were very pleased with that. We actually had a 1% increase in our applications. But because we've looked at our admissions cycle, we have a more rigorous program around how we look at admissions and applications, and because our admission requirements, we are adhering to our admission requirements, we have found that although we have more applications, we have more students who have been denied admission to the university. This semester we implemented interviews for our students who are interested in the university college. And so we actually, it was interesting, we gave students three opportunities to make an interview date, and many students didn't make one interview date. And if students didn't go through the cycle of not only their interviews, but with having a complete application and all of the other requirements for admission, then that student was denied admission. So there have been some changes around the way we do business in our admissions department. Our average ACT score for all of the applications we received was 17. And our average cumulative GPA for all accepted applications was 3.1. I've noted in the report the top 10 majors. They continue to be consistent over the couple of years. Some students are interested in healthcare, nursing, criminal justice, sociology, psychology, biology, business, and early childhood education. Those are some of our top majors. We have many students who come in undecided, and those students are aligned to our first-year experience program, and they work with the advisors in that program, and once they decide on their majors, then they are assigned to advisors in the various departments. Our transfer students. I'd like to share that the majority of students that we have are transfer students at the university, so we are spending a lot of time to help improve their experience when they transfer into the university. So this year, we changed our freshman experience program to a first-year experience program so that when we provided orientations and information sessions to students coming in, it expanded beyond freshman students but included new transfer students who are coming to the university. So we actually admitted about approximately 1,200 transfer students. And when we talk about yield data in our report, we yielded about 45% of those students, and approximately 578 transfer students are enrolled this fall semester. Often when students, they meet the criteria to get into the university, often students apply to multiple universities or they are not ready to transfer at that time. And so although we've admitted them, all of them have not showed up. So we are, again, in the report, I've showed the top 10 majors for the transfer students, and they're pretty consistent with our freshman students' data, the nursing, the criminal justice, business, and psychology, and some of the other majors. Just to highlight, 20% of the admitted transfer applications received selected nursing as a major, so that's one of our more popular programs. Any questions on admissions?
I have a couple of questions. I've just come to understand recently how In terms of our rating, we look very poor when it comes to graduation rate. And I've come to understand that's because it doesn't take into account the wonderful job that you do with the transfer students and the large number of transfer students that we have. But be that as it may, if the ratings are based on the graduation rate of first time, full time, then I'd like to know, I guess it's your job to get as many first time students in as possible. And I don't know whether it's your job or the provost or a judge in terms of giving them out. So I guess my question really is, what is the plan and what are we doing to address the issue of improving our graduation rate of having more first-time, full-time come in and go out in a manner that and improves the grade.
Good question. There are a number of different initiatives that address that, and that those fall under our retention programs. For our freshmen, that freshman experience or first-year experience that has been implemented includes a number of initiatives. My students, the freshman students, when they come in, have to, there's a mandatory touch point with their advisors, and approximately five times a semester they must check in with their advisors, and if they don't check in with their advisors go to their classrooms or call them at home or find them somewhere on campus to do an academic as well as like a social check-in with them to find out what's going on. And that's just, that is their job to just, each freshman advisor has a caseload, and their caseload is, I mean, their responsibility around that caseload is to track that student and work on helping to support that student academically, or if they need to be referred somewhere else, then that advisor works with them on that. So that's one touch point. A second one is we have an early warning system in place. And so that's collectively in the classroom, our professors document and report at the 4th week, the 8th week, and the 12th week, the progress of the student. And so we have actual codes. Has the student been attending? Has the student missed assignments? Is the student not doing well in class? And so we take that data and it goes to the advisors and various members, various offices across the university, and we take that data to do some individualized advising and counseling to that student around their performance. So this actually is the 4th week. That reporting is going on now, and if a student needs tutoring, the student needs to see a counselor, if the student needs is having some financial problems and has difficulty getting to class and we need to refer them somewhere else, then we work with them on those issues. So the early warning system is another example of what we're doing to help retain the students. Another program that we have is called RISE, and it's a retention program, and it's a mandatory tutoring program that we have instituted for various segments of our freshman class. So if a student has come in and they fall into what we call a university college category, and that student is taking developmental classes and has tested below college level, and we already know that they need some assistance, then they are required to attend these RISE workshops to assist them with study tips and survival. It's college survival. Another program that we have is the freshman seminars. So every freshman that is admitted to the university, whether they come in knowing their major or they're undecided, takes a freshman seminar, or it's almost like a college 101 class. And so in that class, they are taught, in addition to the student learning outcomes for that class, are really around how to survive your freshman year of college. And so there's information about satisfactory academic progress. If you want to, I mean, that it is very important for you to maintain a 2.0 at the university if you want to remain enrolled at the university, and these are some ways to be successful at the university. So there are a number of initiatives. Our student affairs team works very hard with the balance of the academic requirements, but ensuring that we have a robust student government association and student activities group and student clubs and orgs, so that students feel that they can balance that university experience with having academic rigor, but having some experiences socially. So we are very focused on retention because we understand that enrollment, you can enroll many students, but if they keep cycling out the door, then that will not impact graduation. So retention is a priority.
Trustee, would you mind if I answer part of that?
Go ahead.
Oh, I mean, I want to call. You have another question.
I did, but it's just a numerical question. I wanted to know how many first-time, full-time students will we have in September, and what percentage of the new students is that number?
Yes. To date, we have approximately 400 new freshmen. And so 400 out of the 6,000 students are new freshmen at the university.
How many of the 6,000 students are new students?
Approximately, let me just, I have that number.
When you say new, you mean first-time, full-time freshmen?
No, I mean new to the university.
New to the university.
I'm trying to compare first-time, okay. Full-time, mm-hmm. plus transfers.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Approximately 1,500, approximately 1,300 of those students are new admits to date.
Of that 1,300, 400 are first-time, full-time?
Yes.
How does that number compare to last September, first-time, full-time?
Last September, our first-time, full-time freshman count was approximately, it's a little over 400, I just want to give you the right number. I believe it was 432. I have it in my numbers, let me.
Well, I don't need an exact number, I just was trying to get an idea of whether that number was up, going down, or staying the same.
It's stable right now. It's around the same.
And we need it to go up, though.
The first time, full time freshman count? Yes, we do need it to go up. This semester and this year, we've also focused on recruitment and retention to high school students, because right now our average age is about 29, and that's because we have more transfer students. So we focused on getting more of those students to select CSU as their first choice. So yes, we need that number to go up.
I realize we're coming up on time here. I'm the new trustee, so I have this question for you. Briefly, if you can, what is the program in place for high school visits for Chicago State counselors, admissions counselors, to go out and be there for lunch or before school or whatever to attract seniors in high school to come to Chicago State for as a freshman?
Yes, so we have, and we just started an outreach department. So we, 4 days out of five, we have a team member who's out talking to principals, talking to counselors, and developing partnerships with the high schools across the city and the surrounding suburbs. So we have different layers of things that are going on, but our program is, what we try to do is find out what the high school needs. We try to connect from a sector perspective. If it's a business-focused high school, if they are focused on STEM, if they have some areas of interest, then our goal is to get them on campus. So for this quarter, we've had some visits to high schools. Evergreen Park High School is one. We've been to some high schools on the west side, and we're finding that there are many high schools who have never been to Chicago State or haven't been here in a while. And so we're trying to rejuvenate their interest and find out what they need. For example, we are hosting today the State Articulation Conference for the entire state. So we have all of the other eight public universities on campus. They were here yesterday and today. And so we had a college fair yesterday. And so all of the high schools, parochial high schools, charter high schools, public high schools, were invited to the college fair yesterday to talk to the public universities. But of course, Chicago State is the host, and we were able to have all of those students come to the campus. And today, we're talking about state articulation, and we expect to have, we're over in our Jones Convocation Center, but we have all of the high school counselors today from the city and the suburbs talking about how we can facilitate articulation better for students when they come from high schools. So we expect approximately 225 students, but we have the admissions counselors as well as the admissions counselors from the colleges as well as the counselors from the high schools. Also, next we will be hosting the Bill Gates Scholarship Fair in our academic library. This is the second year in a row that we've been selected to host. I mean, we requested to host, but we were selected. And we have all of our high-achieving students in the Chicago Public School System who will be our guests at the university, and we will provide information regarding financial resources and academic programs at the university. We realize that in order to balance and increase the number of freshman students coming in, that we must highlight, not only do we have access, and we highlight that we have a strong mission to serve our students in the community and serve all students that, but we also want to attract our high-performance students to our honors programs and our presidential scholars programs and our other academic programs across the university.
Thank you.
I'd like to take a shot at a couple of your questions, starting with Trustee Curtin. With regards to our recruitment in terms of counselors and et cetera, Chicago State on a scale of 10 probably in the past has done about 6 or 7. In terms of us going out to the high schools in a very proactive way, and that's within the city and also external to the city. Within the last 2 years, we've hired a new mission director, Matt Harrison.
He's at the Articulation Conference.
And Matt, his first year and a half, he spent doing back of the house restructuring. And he's now at a point that the back of the house is pretty much together. The back of the house meaning just taking the various clerks and redesigning the processes of how you process an application, taking a look at the criteria for admissions and et cetera. He's now moving to the point where he's going to the front of the house and being more aggressive and setting up plans and strategies to go out into the community throughout Chicago, not just within the south side of Chicago, but the southwest side, the southeast side, and the suburbs of Chicago. Go after a more diverse community, not just in terms of ethnicity, but in terms of we're going to start targeting students who have certain ACT scores and et cetera, all right? That strategic recruitment has not been done in the past. That is something that now that we have the back of the house done, you're going to see that plan rolled out. So that's it. Secondly, the counselors have not been aggressively, interactive with, you might say. All right. Now, dealing with some of the other questions, what we've done, and you know, Vice President Henderson, you know, he did an excellent job in terms of addressing a number of the issues. I'd like to just give a little bit of enhancement. I serve on ACE, American Council on Education. American Council on Education, they are the largest higher education organization in the United States. There are 27 presidents throughout the United States of the 1,227. With the support of Vice President Henderson, we have been pulling together data and information and working with them. And what has happened is that ACE, NAFIL, which is another major organization, Thurgood Marshall, all of these major organizations in higher education throughout the United States have taken a position that the IPES graduation rate, which is what you refer to, is a dinosaur, just to be quite honest. It's no longer applicable. The Illinois Board of Higher Education, and once again, Vice President Henderson was going to a number of meetings in Springfield, and has helped us play a very key role. IBHE is walking away from this IPES 4-year, 6-year formula, all right? Because it was developed 30 years ago and has not changed since then. So the metric, it is being held on to by a couple of elite universities throughout the United States, but the overall university communities throughout the United States, we're developing another one. It will we will hear about it probably at the beginning of next year. We have a board meeting October 12th in Washington, and the new metric will be run by us. And then when we approve it, then it's going to be given to the Department of Education, meaning Mary Duncan. And then as you know, IPED is something that is approved by Congress. So it's almost like a congressional issue that is a dinosaur. So that's one reality. The next one is that, let's take a look at that though. Chicago State, when we came in, was 14% graduation rate, according to IPES. We have moved from 14% to 21%. Is that enough? No, we're gonna do more. No question about it, all right? If you look at the elite institutions within Chicago, public universities, you take the University of Illinois, at Chicago, not Urbana, but at Chicago, the graduation rate for the same cohort of students that we deal with is 33% graduation rate. Ours is 21%. We can do better, we will do better. But what I'm saying is that the cohort of students who we deal with, they're, without a doubt, there's a challenge to get them graduated. We're going to raise our criteria, and in addition to raising the criteria for admission to the university, the major challenge comes before us, and that is, we have students here who we're losing right now, not because they're not academically ready, they just don't have the money. We had to turn down a number of students, Vice President Henderson, Glenn Meeks, they had some real challenges this fall. We were turning down students, telling them that they could not attend in terms of returning because they just didn't have money. They had a B grade point average. So we have to raise money. This university, we must raise money to ensure that these students can be retained. We lost students. And when we lose those students, our graduation rate goes down. So we must raise money. The fundraiser last night was key. I commend the foundation for what they did. But we're going to have to do 10 times that amount if we're going to really address attrition rate for the group of students that we deal with. We must raise money. So we're going to eventually put something before the board. We're going to be trying to reorganize ourselves within the institution to raise significant dollars for scholarships. Now, transfer students, a significant number of our students are transfer students. We have a 50% graduation rate. It's actually 49.9% graduation rate for our transfer students. Governor State, they have a 54% graduation. So we're right in line with our sister institution when it comes to transfer students. Our challenge is with those first-time, full-time freshmen, those students, but we're addressing it by raising the actual criteria. I hope that gives a little bit of insight into it. We do have a challenge. We're going to raise our standards. We're going to strategically and surgically go after a better student and more diverse student. In terms of ethnicity, a more diverse student, in terms of preparation, higher ACT scores, higher grade GPAs. VP, if I remember right, you had told me that our GPA, right along the lines of what the judge mentioned, our GPA this year compared to last year, and our ACT this year compared to last year, has that gone up some?
It went up last year. This year it averages about 17, but the ACT averages about 17, but the average GPA continues to go up. It's the average for this year is 3.1. So we're seeing a different mix, and that's an average. It averages between 17 and 18.
So the stronger student you bring in, the better the chance you have of retaining students. But we have to go back and look at our mission. We don't want to walk away totally from our mission. We can do like the sister university did at the state of Illinois, who raised their criteria, and their African-American base went from 20-some percent down to 11% over a five-year period of time. They had 20-plus percent of their student base. They wanted to get a strong graduation rate. They just changed the criteria, and after 4 to 5 years, the African-American base is sitting right around 11% now. So we don't want to walk away from our mission. We've got to figure out how we do it and still serve our mission. Does that help you any, sir?
It does, and I understand the university has to walk a very fine line. But I just wanted the vice president and you for everyone to know that even though the board realized, we realize as the board what a wonderful job we do with the transfer students. And diversity has been one of my issues all my life. But recognizing the wonderful job with the transfer students and the need to maintain the diversity that we have. And of course, I care about African-American students. At the same time, the board has to deal with improving the public perception of the quality of this university. And when the newspaper, there's a graduation rate that gets published in the newspaper. And that rate is based on first time, full time. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I said the university has to maintain diversity, continue to attract the transfer, and at the same time has to improve the rate of first time, full time to help with everything. I understand the fundraising efforts you want to do in the future, which are necessary, but everything this university wants to do in the future will be enhanced by changing that graduation rate, making it higher, and subsequently improving the image.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, Vice President.
Thank you.
Okay, now we welcome any public employee comments. None. I'd ask for a motion from the board to adjourn.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Curtin?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
Okay, the September 21, 2012 Academic and Student Affairs Committee meeting of the Chicago State University Board of Trustees is hereby adjourned.